Getting back to this study, we're going through the book of Genesis. If you're visiting with us, we've been in it for a little while now and have taken this break because of the holidays and so forth. So we want to get back to where we had stopped, and this is where we were. Genesis chapter 30, verse 25, all the way through chapter 31, verse 21 is where we're going to try to cover today. This is an important historical chapter in the timeline of Jacob's life. So that's good, but as you noted, as we read this, you may wonder, well, what really practical benefit is there in my life? You know, there's probably not going to be any of our memory verses I'm ever going to pull from this section of Scripture for us to memorize, so it's not noted for verses like that. And so I'd like to approach this a little different than I normally go through a passage, more verse by verse, and I just want to talk to you about some things here. Now, let me introduce it this way. As you know, in Christianity, there's a segment of Christianity that teaches that financial prosperity is your right as a child of God. And maybe you've heard phrases like this, you know, you're a child of the king, or the children of the king don't drive junk cars, and things like that. And so what they teach is that they exhort Christians to claim by faith their right to financial prosperity because they're a child of the king, a king's kid, you hear sometimes. Maybe I'm sure you've heard that segment and that kind of teaching. What you may not be familiar with is that on the other side, although it's much less popular as you would understand, there is a segment that teaches material wealth is incompatible with the Christian faith. And so they argue, for example, that it's wrong to drive a nice expensive car because Jesus never would have done that. And so they exhort believers to give everything away above basically a subsistence type of lifestyle of living. And so you kind of hit from both sides, aren't you? If you don't have enough money, you're challenged and called to, you need to exhort your faith or claim your faith in what God promises to give you as His child. If you have too much money, then you're labeled as sinning and holding back and not giving away as much as you should give away. So you just kind of hit from both sides on this. And these teachings have therefore led to a lot of confusion, a lot of wrong thinking, and even in some people, guilt. And so what I want to do with this passage, it may seem strange when I first announce it, but I would like to just use this passage to talk some about God's perspective on prosperity. God's perspective on prosperity. And you may be thinking, okay, this is going to be a waste of time because I'm not prosperous. I got you. I know where you are. I'm with you. But in terms of most of the world, we're very prosperous, aren't we? Very, very prosperous. So let's look at this. Now, granted, this text, it's not going to give us some comprehensive biblical treatment presentation on the subject of prosperity, but it does reveal some truth in Jacob's life as God prospers him. And so that's what we're going to draw out and highlight. He had fled Haran, if you remember. Just had his staff, as he tells us in chapter 30. That's all he had, nothing with him, just his staff. And now at the end of, or in the middle of chapter 30, he has, I guess you could say, four wives. He has 11 sons and some daughters now. God has blessed him in that respect. And if you look at the end of chapter 30, it tells us he is now exceedingly prosperous. God has richly, richly blessed him. And so at this point, you cross over to chapter 31. God appears to him in a dream and instructs him, I'm the God of Bethel. I appeared to you at Bethel. You made a vow with me. It's now time to head back home to the land of Canaan, to Isaac and your ancestors. And so if you go back to Jacob's experience at Bethel in chapter 28, you'll find that God made these unique promises now to Jacob. He made them to Abraham. He made them to his father Isaac. But at Bethel, he made them to Jacob as well. And so he promised him, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to multiply your descendants. I'm going to give you so much and use you to bless others. All the promises he'd made to Abraham were now made to Jacob. But, God didn't make those promises to Jacob just so he could grow wealthy and just have a life of ease and comfort and so forth. Listen to this. The goal of God's promises to prosper Abraham and his descendants was that in them all the families of the earth would be blessed. He said that several times to Abraham, to Isaac, and even now to Jacob. And so the blessed people were to become a channel of God's blessings to others. Yes, primarily through the coming of the Savior as a descendant of Abraham, But there were many other ways God wanted to use them to bless the nations, to bless people. So the prosperity God gives to his people, you know, in our culture it's hard because, boy, it's so easy to spend it on ourselves and think we're doing what's normal because we look around us and we see what everybody else is doing, or they're doing more than we're doing. But God never gives us prosperity for the purpose of selfish living, but to use that prosperity for his purposes that he is directing us in. So let's just use this passage. As I said, we're not going to go verse by verse like we normally do, but just to draw out three perspectives about prosperity. Again, not a comprehensive treatment, but I find these are three things that I need to constantly be reminded of in this prosperous, materialistic culture that we live. So here's the first one. We need to note, prosperity comes from the Lord. That's obvious, but we need to be reminded of that sometimes. Here we are in America. America takes great pride in the self-made man. You know, we go out there, you work hard, you pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you achieve the American dream, you pat yourself on the back saying, look what I've been able to do. I fulfilled, accomplished the American dream. But the teaching of the Bible, very clear. Prosperity comes from the Lord, even to those who don't even know the Lord. It comes because God allows it. God blesses them with it. Prosperity comes from the Lord, not from our ingenuity, not from our hard work, not from the breaks that I get in life. Does God use those? Yeah. But it's not because of those. God's behind that. You spoke about God's in control of all things in Sunday school. God's control of those things as well. He's behind those things. And so if we prosper, it's because God has prospered us. For he could have, think about it, he could have prevented it anywhere along the line in a thousand ways, different ways. In fact, you had the health to work hard because God allowed it. In fact, you were in some accident that made you confined to a bed because God protected you. The break that you got is because God was behind that, orchestrating all of that. He could have prevented your prosperity in a thousand different ways. And so, yes, you worked hard. He gave you the health to work hard, gave you the determination to work hard. But without him, you would not have any prosperity. I don't care who you are and what you have achieved. Jacob seems to have recognized this principle, at least in part. Jump ahead to chapter 31, the end of verse 5. He's talking to his wives. He says, the God of my father has been with me. Verse 7 of chapter 31, he says, God did not allow your father Laban to hurt me, to hinder me. Verse 9, he acknowledges, thus God has taken away your father's livestock. He's given it to me. Your father tried to circumvent all that, but God orchestrated and blessed me in spite of that. And so, I mean, yeah, this could just be Jacob spouting off words, because we all love, when we have good success, to claim God's on our side. But I sense there is something developing in Jacob and understanding more about the Lord and giving himself to trusting him, and that his prosperity, in spite of all these years he has been under Laban's thumb and Laban has cheated him, in spite of all that, I think Jacob does truly recognize God has been with him and God has blessed him, at least in part, that he knows his prosperity comes from the Lord. And the reason I say in part, because in this section we're going to read next, we do see the scheming little side of Jacob, trying to work things to his advantage. He can't quite get away from that yet. And in fact, he's dealing with someone who's a schemer himself, so he's trying to pit his wits against the master schemer himself in Laban. And so that's kind of a little bit of the story. So let's pick it up. Verse 25, we last left Jacob off in the section before that, the birth of his 11th son, Joseph, by Rachel. Rachel finally has a child. He's now finished his second 7 years of indentured service to his father-in-law, Laban. And so with that obligation fulfilled, there's a yearning in him to return home. And so he goes to Laban, verse 25. He says, I'm wanting to go home. Verse 27, Laban acknowledges that he's prospered because of Jacob working for him, even though Jacob has not prospered. And he's not exactly interested because of that, of letting Jacob go yet. And so verse 28, he tells Jacob, make an offer. I'll start paying you for your work. Now, Jacob has dealt with this guy up at this point for 14 years. He knows what a crooked guy he is. He knows what he's dealing with. And so he first begins building his case, verse 29 and 30, by listing what he's done for Laban. He basically says, Laban, when I came here, you had nothing. You had very little. And now 14 years later, you have an abundance of flocks and so forth. God has blessed you because of me. But now he says at the end of verse 30, I need to start thinking about my own family, taking care of my own family. And so verse 31, Laban says, okay, you name your wage. And so Jacob makes this proposal that sounds to Laban just too good to be true. You look at the end of the second half of verse 31, basically what Jacob says is, I'll keep pasturing your flock for a while, but I get all the spotted, the speckled sheep and the spotted and speckled goats that you have and that will be born in the future. Now, you got to understand that speckled, spotted sheep and goats were a rare thing. So, I mean, he had some already, Laban did, but Jacob says, Laban recognized, this is a rare thing, so how much is this really going to cost me? This guy's not too bright. If that's what he wants, it's his wages. So, if you see a good deal like that, what are you going to do? That sounds good to me, Jacob. So he agrees. But just to doubly make sure he doesn't lose out on this deal, look at verse 35 and 36. Laban goes out to the flock and he removes all those kinds of sheep and goats. He gives them to his son, sends them 3 days' journey away from Jacob because he doesn't want to take a chance of those spotted and speckled ones mating with what he has. And so he's already changing the terms of agreement and trying to cheat Jacob, which I already read for you. He did that 10 different times. That's the kind of guy Laban is. Now, Jacob's not one to sit around bemoaning a setback. So he sets to work implementing what was a common thinking in his day. So let's read this. We skipped over this before. Start with verse 37. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees, peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. He set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even in the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink. And they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth stripes, speckled and spotted. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped, all the black in front in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart. He did not put them with Laman's flock. Moreover, when the stronger the flock was mating, Jacob would place the rods in the side of the flock in the gutter so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler ones were whose? Laban's. The stronger ones became Jacob's. And so the man Jacob became exceedingly prosperous, had large flocks, female and male servants, camels, donkeys. So you see what he did. He took these branches, he peeled back the bark away from them, exposed the white wood underneath. The thinking was, when the females came to mate and they saw that visual thing before them, that somehow that impacted what kind of animal they had. I'm not saying that was a true thing, but that was the belief of the time. And so that's what Jacob practiced. But if you look over in chapter 31, verse 9, Jacob does indicate, it really was God who gave the increase. But if you'd sat down with Jacob and say, Jacob, how did you end up with all this? I imagine he would have said, my own ingenuity, my hard work. Oh, yeah, the Lord was there as well. Because we always like to think we had something to do with it, don't we? But if you get into chapter 31, God does come, and he appears to Jacob in a dream. And he does begin to lay out, Jacob, yeah, you did all this stuff, but I was the one that was in charge. I was the one that brought forth the speckled, the spotted lambs and goats and so forth. I was the one that was behind that. You need to recognize it was me. God was the one who determined what kind of sheep, what kind of goats were born. Jacob's theory really had nothing to do with it. God was at work. Now, was his hard work important? Yeah. The Bible commends hard work, doesn't it? It also condemns laziness. We need to recognize that aspect. But it wasn't just his hard work, because there's some people we know, maybe you know them, they've worked hard all their lives and they've never prospered. And then also, if as a follower of Christ, if you want to bring the concept of you want to be a person of integrity into it, well, integrity doesn't always lead to blessing either, does it? Because a lot of times it's the scoundrel who prospers, and because of your integrity, you come out on the short end of the stick. So, bottom line is, prosperity comes from the Lord alone. Not from all the things I do, although God uses that and will bless that, but it comes because God's the one in charge. Now, who was reading this for the first time? Remember, Moses is the one who's putting together the Pentateuch, so the Israelites are the first ones to be reading, hearing the story of Genesis in a written form. They'd had the oral traditions passed down. And so there's some parallels here they needed to be aware of, if you think about it. Jacob went to Haran without anything. When the Israelites moved down to Egypt, they had some, but very little. Jacob became prosperous as God gave Laban's wealth to him. Israelites became prosperous how? Because God gave the Egyptians wealth to them. And so the Israelites needed to be reminded, just like Jacob is, that the prosperity they are enjoying now that they've left Egypt came not because of anything they did, but it's because the Lord has blessed them. Prosperity comes from the Lord. Now, do we need to be reminded of that? In a culture that we live in, the kind of values our culture puts forth, how you're to be successful, how you're to enjoy prosperity, yeah. We need to be reminded of this simple principle too. And there's also the principle of stewardship involved, is it not? That God gives prosperity, but it belongs to Him. And we are to be stewards, managers of what He has given to us. Because the tendency, even in many Christians, is that whatever we have is ours because I worked hard for it. And so if I'm extremely generous, God may get 10%, although many people don't even do that anymore. That'd be extremely generous. But the rest is for my benefit, to make my life comfortable, to bless my kids, to do things for my kids, to buy fun stuff, to buy all the things you just have to have or your kids think they have to have. You know, I get to do all that with the rest of it. Who was it that... R.G. Letourneau, wasn't it? He gave 90% to the Lord and lived off 10%. Now, granted, he made more than I did. But still, it was a tremendous principle. I'm going to give 90% to the Lord, and I'm going to live off what's left over to 10%. Very radical concept. But God's the one who gives prosperity. All prosperity comes from Him. So therefore, the second principle we want to think about is prosperity must be used then for God's purposes. I'm His steward. He's the one who gives it to me, and He gives it to me to accomplish His purposes through my particular little circle, my life that He has blessed me with. So God gives prosperity, not for enjoyment alone. He gives prosperity so that those He blesses will do what? Bless others. Bless others. And you find that all through the Bible. Many times we don't see that concept, but you start reading it with that in your mind, and you'll find out how often that's the principle. God blesses for the purpose of us blessing people, blessing the nations. That's why God reminded Jacob. Look at chapter 31, verse 13. He says, I'm the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. So God is calling Jacob back to the purpose He had for him. Jacob had come to Haran, but now it's time for him to fulfill that vow of going back to the land for the purpose God had for him of raising him up, blessing him with those Abrahamic promises and covenant, so that through him and his descendants, the nations would be blessed. Now, I'm not sure to what extent Jacob grasped all of that yet. It's still kind of foggish in his mind. It's going to become plainer in the years to come. But again, this was something that Moses' readers needed to understand. Because why? They're fixing to enter the promised land. They've plundered the Egyptians. They've got wealth. Now they're fixing to go into promised land where Moses tells them, you're going to live in houses you didn't build. You're going to drink from cisterns you didn't dig. You're going to enjoy the vineyards and olive trees that you didn't plant. And he tells them, you better beware. Why? Because when you get there and you start enjoying all that prosperity, the temptation is going to be to think, this is because of what I have done. And Moses says, you better be aware. It's not because of what you have done by your hands, by your strength. It's because God has blessed you. And so it was a call for them to remember that. And we face the same temptation too. God's blessed Americans with more material prosperity than just about any nation in history. And even the poorest of us are rich, as we said, by many of the other places around the world. And if you don't believe that, just go to some foreign country. I remember back in 1981, when Denise and I first started in ministry, one of the first things we did was we took the youth group to minister in an orphanage in Mexico. And I'll never forget this. We were not, literally, we were not one block in to Mexico. And it was night and day difference. You thought you had entered literally another world. Just one block in. The prosperity we have in America is phenomenal compared to so much of the rest of the world. So you go to countries like that, I don't know where you stand, if you're middle, lower class, whatever you are, you go to a country like that and you're rich. You're upper class. So God has blessed us for a purpose. And so the question is, are you being a good steward with that prosperity God has given to you? God's purpose is to bless all nations, to bless all people, through the seed of Abraham, yes, who ultimately was Christ, but those of us who know Christ, who are Christ followers, we're now to be channels of God's blessings to the people around us and around the world. So we got to be careful of misusing God's prosperity He's given us on ourselves when there's people around us in our church, in our community, and the nations that still haven't heard. I've never heard. Let me correct that. I may have heard one time, but I don't think I've ever heard any missions agency say, "Quit sending us money. We don't need any more. Everything's met." I don't think that happens. And maybe it happened once in my lifetime that I know of. It doesn't happen because people have a tendency to hoard the prosperity God has given to them. Now, I want to add a caution here, because when you get talking about what people should give, there's a very real temptation to look at the other person and say, they're not giving enough. Especially if they're a more prosperous person. And really, when we make that comment, generally, what's the attitude behind that? I'm jealous because of they got greater success and prosperity than I have. That's generally the attitude when we make those kinds of comments. And by the way, you don't really know all the facts, what's going on in their life and what they do anyway. You might be surprised what maybe some people in this church give that you know nothing about. And you're judging it on the surface by what you see. And so we've got to be careful about putting what we think someone should give upon them. Here's the secret. Here's the principle, in other words. Don't judge your brother. Don't judge your sister. Judge yourself. Because you're called to be a steward of what God has given to you. You judge yourself. And don't judge the other person. Here's the principle from the New Testament. 1 Timothy 6, 17 and 18. Instruct the person that is not considered or makes their whole in the service, but on God, which supplies with all to enjoy, to do good, rich in works, be generous, and ready to share. Don't judge your brother, don't judge yourself. It's just my manager, God blessed with, so the blessing to others, and I'm a blessing to the nations. Or I spend a whole lot more on myself and my sins that I want to have, my kids will have, or my life. Or something, we're honest. We sound just to save our own cars and things. We get to come to spend a lot on ourselves. We really do spend a lot on ourselves. So God's purpose in giving you prosperity, blessers, blessings. So that's the last principle, and that is prosperity requires that we listen to and obey the Lord. You know, as far as the text goes, God didn't appear to Jacob from the time at Bethel when he arrived in Haran to all those difficult years he had to work under Laban. God didn't appear to him. It was here at the end, chapter 31, that God finally appears to Jacob. After he had become exceedingly prosperous, and then God appears to him and he tells him, now's the time to return to Canaan. And as he appears to Jacob, what was Jacob's response? Where is it? Verse 11, he says, "Here I am, Lord." And then we see in verse 17, Jacob obeying and doing exactly what God told him to do. He's a little scared there because he leaves when Laban didn't know about it. But he still followed through in obedience to what God had told him to do. You know, a couple of dangers we face with prosperity. One is maybe if we're in that period where it doesn't seem like God is blessing us, the temptation then is to think, where's God? Is he always good? Where's God? He's not answering my need. Things don't seem to be happening. I don't know if Jacob ever thought that in these, it ended up being 20 years he worked for Laban. I don't know if any time in that period, Jacob wondered, where's this God that made this covenant with me at Bethel? He doesn't seem to be showing up. And we face that same kind of thing when we've cried out to the Lord and it doesn't seem like he's providing. But it's during those times, is it not, that he's trying to teach us this whole concept of trust and obey and waiting and crying out to him. And also, by the way, it's during those times when maybe he is wanting someone else over here. He has prospered to be his instrument to bless you, and maybe they're messing up and don't want to follow through or not hearing the Lord. So he doesn't always, you know, just dump a pile of money on your lap. He doesn't always give you the huge raise or the new job. Many times he's wanting to use his people to provide for needs, and we need to be aware of that. The second danger with regard to prosperity is, of course, just that inherent danger of wealth, money. Money's not evil in itself, is it? But when it mixes with sinful human nature, as Timothy warns us about, it can lead to all sorts of what? Evil. All sorts of sin. And so when you're prosperous, it is easy, as we've talked about some, to grow independent, forget the Lord's the source, that he and his purpose, of why he's wanting to prosper you, why he has prospered you, to forget that you are a steward, a manager of that, and to start looking around and allowing the lifestyle of what other people are doing to impact you so that you're trying to match that a little bit, at least. That's the temptation that comes many times to us. So prosperity has some built-in dangers, doesn't it, that we have to battle against. I don't know if you've ever heard this. John Wesley made this little sensible formula. It says this: make all you can, save all you can, give all you can. What happens with Americans is we think, well, 2 out of 3 is not bad. So we like the first two, but that third one, that kind of gets to us sometimes. And we don't like that. And I tell you, I'm just talking generally, I'm not talking to you necessarily, but as you look at some of the reports on church giving, it's tragic and it is sad. I was talking with someone, they go to a fairly large church, about 1,000 or so. They live in a pretty prosperous area of the country. And at their annual meeting, as they were presenting the financial report, the report that came in was this: 70% of this congregation of 1,000, not talking about the kids, but the givers, 70% of them, and I was trying to remember what the figure, it was either 70% of them gave 500 or less or 1,000 or less. We'll go with the higher figure, 1,000, okay? Which means if they were tithing, they made what? $10,000. I don't think that was their salary. But that was the pattern in that church. I looked up on the internet this week to see what I could find. The most recent figures I found was 2012. But in 2012, giving across all denominations, so I realize, you know, what's involved with that, but giving across all denominations was 2.21% of net earnings. Are we being good stewards with the prosperity God has given to us? Are we fulfilling the purpose of why God has given us prosperity? Many years ago now, I don't know if you're familiar with a man by the name of Carl F. Henry, used of God in great ways in theological realm for Christianity and battling some of the battles we've had in culture. But he remarked about one prominent denomination, won't tell you what it is, prominent, solid denomination in our country that emphasizes missions. And it was demonstrated that the average giving to missions in this denomination that emphasizes missions, the average giving per member per year was $10. And this is what Carl Henry said to that. He said, think of it. People give the cost of one restaurant meal on bargain night to save the world without Christ. A world of over, at that time, 4 billion people, half of whom have yet to hear the gospel. So in this solid denomination, emphasizes missions, on average, people gave the cost of a restaurant meal on bargain night to reach the lost for Christ. God blesses us for the purpose of blessing others and blessing the nations. And you're not going to like this, probably, but this is a very convicting quote by C.S. Lewis. I came across it several years ago, and boy, it makes you think. So I'll leave you with this. He said, "I do not believe I sell how you ought to. I'm afraid the only safe fool is give more than we expect." In other words, our expenditures on comfort, luxuries, amusements, etc. are up to the same standards, the same income hours, probably way too little. Your lifestyle looks like someone else who doesn't even know the Lord is on the same income level as you. Is it really fulfilling God's purpose that He wants you to use the prosperity He's blessed you with? God is the one who gives us prosperity. He gives it to us to use for His purpose, and therefore we must be listening to Him, to obey Him in what He tells us to do and how He tells us to use what He has blessed us with. That is God's perspective on prosperity. So may the Lord give us ears to hear. Let's pray. Father, it's always an interesting time when in churches we talk about money and giving and prosperity. So Lord, just Your Spirit apply it to our lives. Give us the ears to hear, the wills to obey. I do thank You for a generous congregation that gives to You, that gives to others, that blesses the nations. I am grateful for that. But Lord, let us not rest on past laurels. Help us to be faithful to hearing what You want us to do now. Guard us, correct us from selfishness. Guard us, correct us from how we have maybe inadvertently been led into thinking more like the world than we recognize. Maybe let us go home and look at the stuff we have. Let us think about the things we do, the places we go, the money we spend on ourselves. Correct us any way that You see fit. But Lord, use us to bless others and to bless the nations. For I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.